Good afternoon. Well, we do have an update now as we get to the not many months left to take advantage of 12B. And before, however, we get into today's webinar, where we're going to unpack another innovative approach from our partners at FutureNears. Stuart, would you like to just make sure everybody has got the tech working?
Excellent. Thanks, Alec. And thanks, James and Dion, for being here. Just quickly, those new to the webinars, there's a little control panel at the bottom of your screen. If you can hear my voice and see me and the others on screen, can you please give us a high five? Taze, thank you very much, Taze. Early high five there. We also like to keep it conversational. I know Alec will manage the questions, but please, there's a chat box. Sorry, it's a Q&A box next to the chat box. If you can put your questions in there, and they'll come through to Alec and he can manage from that side. But all good on this side, Alec.
Magic. Thank you, Stu. Well, here is our two experts today, as promised. Dion Lewis and James Rothman are with FutureNears. We've had a relationship with FutureNears for quite some time, and you guys have always been innovative. But what you've done today is like taking the cake for me, Dion. It really has. The using wheeling, and you can explain all of that in a moment, but just from a business point of view, we first heard about wheeling from Jan Oberholzer, who was at the time he was COO, and he was working together with some people in the private sector to get wheeling to work, to actually get through the treacle of Eskom. They managed to do that, and now it's become something that investors in 12B, and I'd love us to start there, are going to be able to take advantage of as well. But let's just go back to 12B. And I also wrote this to the premium subscribers of BizNews that I had dinner with a new friend who said to me, look, he's not interested in this 12B stuff because it's too good to be true. It can't be right. And he saved a lot of money by not going into kubus and Ponzi schemes and pyramid schemes, etc., where it looked too good to be true and some of his neighbors got caught. 12B has got a similar impression amongst some people. And I listened to him and it wasn't much I could actually explain to him except to say that this is something that the government is giving us and they're giving it to us for a very good reason. But you must have these questions all the time and particularly when you gear up the investment. And how do you answer that?
Yeah, thank you very much, Alec, for the opportunity to be with you guys today and your community. And absolutely great. I mean, we get it all the time. And when we build these products, you know, we always cognizant of the fact that, you know, we should be guarding against that it looks too good to be true. But let's just talk about the difference between RR and a return in a project. Now, I think that's the first place where investors might get confused a little bit, because if you think about an RR calculation, the timing
of cash... What is IRR? Now, slow down. What's IRR? If you're parting me with my money, I need to know what all of these anagrams mean.
So that means internal rate of return. Now, that's how all the funds express their return profile. Now, if you understand IRR, it's the function of one of the key elements in driving that number is the timing of the returns of your cash. So if you consider the fact that in these investments, these tax-structured investments, a big portion, in our case, all of your capital, is returned by SARS in year one, it pushes up the RR number, the percentage return number. And I think investors sometimes get confused between a normal return and an internal rate of return. So I think that's the first point I want to make. The second point I want to make is if you understand 12B and the deduction in principle that SARS allows of 125%, and let's just break it down to 100 Rand investment, for example. An investor makes 100 Rand investment into one of these projects or partnerships. He's on a 45% tax rate as an example. It means that he will qualify for 100 Rand times 125%, which is the deduction, times 45%, which then equates to a 56 Rand return from SARS.
All right, let's slow down there, Dion, if you don't mind. So you are on your tax return, for the 100 Rand investment on your tax return, you put in a deduction of 125 Rand because there's a special benefit to this. Government wants you to invest in these projects, which are to solve our electricity crisis. And then if you take that 125% deduction on your tax form or the 100 Rand that you've put in, that is directly going to give you back 56 Rand immediately. So if that was money out of your cash, out of your back pocket, you're going to get 56 Rand back in tax that you would otherwise have paid. So I kind of get that. So I'm clear. But now you guys have done something even smarter on that.
And now we gear it up. So we say, as an example now, invest your 100 Rand. We will put in another 50 Rand by means of debt. So you'll be investing 100, yet you will be buying an asset of 150 Rand. So therefore, your deduction is now 150 Rand times 125% times your tax rate of 45%. So suddenly that number shoots up. And that all contributes to this internal rate of return number that goes so high. Because these initial returns come in early. They come in the first year.
James, you want to add anything there?
Yeah. No, thanks, Alec. And I think Dion is absolutely spot on there. The only thing that I might add is I think there's a distinction between Section 12B and Section 12BA. And Section 12BA is the 125%, and that's probably the best tax break that's ever existed in South Africa. So that is probably contributing to the fact why people think that it's too good to be true, if I can put it like that. Because, never before have we seen 125% tax deduction on an asset, any asset for that matter. So usually 100% tax deduction is quite nice. On any asset-backed instrument, but then 125%, and that's really because South Africa has had this terrible ride in terms of electricity production over the last couple of years. Seems to be working, or what they've been doing seems to be working, but we're still going to need quite a lot of renewable energy production coming in the next 10, 15 years.
So let's again just to really explain it in words that we can all understand. South Africa was in trouble. We know that if we don't produce electricity, the economy grinds to a halt. And that's exactly what we've been through in the last few years. Eskom couldn't see the way out. The government, which is a socialist government in many respects, was almost forced into a corner to say, damn it, we've got to do something to generate electricity. We've got to find a way to get more electricity in the system. And so, unusually for them, they brought in a tax deduction. That's why it's kind of it's a one-off, and it's not likely to be repeated in the near future. So they did that to make sure that we could get the electricity problem solved. And my goodness, it has been solved, because the private sector's come in a big way. People have put, you guys have raised, Dion, 600 million? Is that correct?
Yeah. No, absolutely, Alec. And if you look at just the 2024 projections, we're still sitting with a baseload shortfall of 17,500 megawatts. Now, if you consider that 3,500 megawatts were added by renewable energy producers in the last 2 years, there's still a massive way to go. And then once we go through the presentation, we'll start understanding why Wheeling is so unique, because there's suddenly an opportunity for clients to access energy at a lower rate than Eskom.
It's extraordinary. And we'll again, your innovations, not just on the gearing up, but on using this Wheeling thing, which is also something brand new to come from Eskom. But I guess that for people in the BizNews community, for our tribe, just remember that this has come along not because the government felt generous. This came along because South Africa was in crisis. It did not have enough electricity, and the government realized, this ANC government realized, that if you don't get electricity, you can't have a growing economy, so then your taxes keep falling and you can't really run the country anymore. So there was a crisis. It's now being addressed. The private sector's rode into the rescue. Private investors have been supporting all of this, and Futureneers, as an example, has raised 600 million Rand, which has been injected into this area, desperately needed capital from private hands. And it is quite interesting to realize that South African companies have been very remiss in investing in the country because they feel that there isn't that much, that much opportunity. So we've got 1.5 trillion rand on balance sheets of South African companies. So the government had to say, well, we got to get this money from somewhere. The international guys are not interested. They haven't been investing. Where do we get it from? Bring in a tax incentive that has given individuals like you and I an opportunity to reduce our tax, to get the capital in there and to solve this problem. So it's if I can understand that, then I can understand why this is too good to be true, because it is, as James said a moment ago, unprecedented in South Africa, but there's a history, there's a background to it. So great, we've got that all sorted out. Wheeling is something that you're going to explain in more detail. Dion, do you want to pick up on your presentation now?
Sure. Can everybody see my screen?
Yeah, perfect.
Thank you, Alec. Yes, so our 2025 Section 12B Wheeling Partnership, just pointing out that the closing date for this particular raise is the 25th of July this year. So just keep that in mind. So these photos that you see here are actual photos of the first phase of this plant that we constructed before the end of February 2024. So some of the guys on the webinar today will probably have seen some of the material. Many of them would have invested in the previous phase, but these are actual photographs. And essentially what we're doing now is we're constructing phase two of this particular plant, with the fundamental difference that if you remember back to February, the first 4.2 megawatt, which is the pictures that you've seen here, were constructed for a specific off-taker, which was Nicolor Gold Processing Plant. But phase two, what we're doing here now, is earmarked specifically for Wheeling, meaning that we are able to sell our energy to multiple clients on the Eskom infrastructure. So maybe just in terms of background, you know, there's a massive shift in the SA energy landscape. You know, virtual PPAs, which stands for power purchase agreements, underpinned by Wheeling, is absolutely changing the market completely. You know, everybody knows that if Eskom is busy unbundling into generation, transmission, and distribution, and that plays right into the hands of independent power producers. Now, if you think of traditional models that we most of us are familiar about, just one second, my screen is flickering. I can't see. There we go. If you think about traditional models where energy is generated by independent power producer and sold to a one off-taker, that's referred to as a PPA, a single PPA. So it's a one-to-one relationship. What we're doing here through Wheeling is we've got the ability to have a one-to-many sales relationship, which is referred to as a virtual power purchase agreement, using the Eskom infrastructure or transmission grid to get the energy to the clients that we sell to. It also opens up the market for traditional or energy traders. Suddenly, there's energy traders. There's a new sector that's opening in the energy market where energy traders acquire bulk energy from independent power producers like us, and they onsell that to multiple clients that they've signed agreements with. So what you see happening in the industry is commercial and industrial clients, the future of their energy provision will be self-generation through rooftop solar, in combination with these virtual PPAs, where they've got the ability to buy discounted energy at shorter PPA terms than necessarily 15, 20 to 25 years.
Jan, just to jump in here quickly so that it's absolutely clear in my mind, in the past, when you put together these projects, you had to find, as you explained with Nicor, a partner on the other end. And there was always a risk at some point that partner, however small it would be, would not be around. Whereas this time you're selling into, it's almost like a an infinite grid, an infinite demand area, which, if I hear it correctly, is that you are going to be 100% sold due to the whole wheeling process. Is there any risk to that, or am I assuming something that isn't true?
No, Alec, you are right. And I think the next slide sort of explains it. And I mean, there's always risk, and we'll get to the risks in more detail later on in the presentation. But just understanding this wheeling concept, and this actually comes right out of the Eskom wheeling white paper, which I've asked Stuart to put a link up into the chat so investors can access that white paper, that Eskom white paper that explains this in more detail. But essentially what it does is it gives us, as a solar producer or a solar energy producer, in this case in the Northwest Province, or for that matter, a wind energy generation plant, the ability to go and sign a power purchase agreement with any client that's currently connected to the Eskom infrastructure. Now, that's an important distinction because at this point in time, it doesn't work in all municipalities. So if a client is linked or buys his energy through a municipality, wheeling does not work yet in all municipalities. It works in the city of Cape Town, no surprise. It works in Port Elizabeth, interestingly enough, and it works in the Ekurhuleni district municipality. But what we are doing here is we are targeting time of use, medium voltage clients that's directly linked to the Eskom grid. And there's many, many, many of them. All your big users, most of your big users are linked to Eskom like that. So we sign a power purchase agreement directly with the client. And then we use the Eskom infrastructure, the transmission grid, to transmit the energy to them. Now, obviously, there's a charge here. There's a transmission charge that we pay as a power producer. But the relationship and the contractual relationship sits with us directly with the client. So it's not a case where Eskom needs to pay us. It's a very important distinction. Any questions on that, maybe? Okay. So I think
important... Sorry, Alec, you muted. Sorry, missed you there. Sorry, just jumping in.
Yammer. I was just saying I will jump in whenever an opportunity exists. There are some questions, but let's just keep going and then we can get onto the questions a little later.
Okay. So what sets this investment apart from what we've done before and other investments in the market? I think the first and obvious thing is the fact that we've got a proven track record. You know, we've constructed this first phase of this plant in record time. It was done before the February cutoff. So investors that invested in that phase will qualify for their 12B deductions. And what we're doing here now is obviously the phase two, which is 10 megawatts. This is an important distinction. Strategically located on the Eskom infrastructure. Now, many people are talking about wheeling, but if you're not connected to the Eskom grid in the correct area where there's a massive demand, you won't be able to do it. So we are very lucky with where we are connected in the Northwest Province. It's in that mining hub where there's massive demand, and also where the infrastructure that has not necessarily now been used because some of the mines closed down is there. And we've got the ability to expand this plant to 90 megawatts, which is obviously massive. 90 megawatts. Now, this particular 10 megawatt that we're constructing here is firstly, it's backed by a 25-year PPA, single PPA as a backup within Nyanza Light Metals. That's a multi-billion rand developer in the Richards Bay KZN industrial zone. But this only kicks in 3 years' time. So the strategy is that we sign shorter-term virtual PPAs with clients on the Eskom grid, as I've explained before, where we can demand higher rate. If you think about it, you know, clients that are signing 20 to 25-year PPAs, you know, those PPAs are at very competitive rates. And they tend to escalate at, let's call it CPI plus 2. And, you know, 4 or 5 years down the line, if you look where Eskom is increasing and where those PPAs are increasing, we're sitting with a massive opportunity to gain excess margin through doing this. And then as a last strategy. We're also in agreement with a number of the energy traders that I've explained earlier to offset this energy. And then from a land perspective, also important, we've got access to the land with commercial lease terms, and all the EIA approvals for this 10 megawatt is in place.
There was a question from Nathan who wants to know, and by the way, when you put in your questions, just to remind you, I will only use your first name, and that retains your anonymity. Nathan wants to know, is there benefit for individuals who've ceased tax residency in South Africa?
Yeah, Alec, I think I'm going to take that one. The short answer is, if you pay tax in South Africa, there's still a benefit for the individual, but it wouldn't make as much sense if you don't have any tax to pay in South Africa. So if he's not a tax resident anymore, but he's probably might still have some assets here in South Africa, and you know those South African assets are taxed, that would benefit. But if there's no taxes to be paid in South Africa, the benefit is not as big.
James, maybe a follow-up there, the obvious one. You said if you have assets in South Africa, let's say that those assets get sold and you've got a CGT exposure. If you were to invest here, can you carry forward the tax benefit so that when you do sell that asset, you can set it off against the capital gains tax or indeed any income tax that might be be required?
So, Alec, from a tax point of view, all capital gains are included in South Africa in your income tax. So you can definitely use a 12B product to lower your tax bill in the event of a CGT event. So for companies, it's 80% that's included in your taxable income, and for individuals, it's only 40%. So effectively, you know, you only have to invest 40% of your capital gain, if you're an individual, into a 12B product to offset, or in solar assets to offset your whole capital gain. And it's even less if you consider that there's 125%. So you only need access to, my public math is struggling now a little bit, but less than 40% of your capital gain in solar assets to offset the whole capital gains tax.
So let me just understand this. If I hold shares in, say, Naspers, and I've held them for many years, or I've got a house that I've owned for a long, long time as a second property, as an investment, and I've got a capital gains tax event, as you guys call it, coming very soon, would this be something that I should seriously look at so that I can offset the taxes that I'm going to have to pay on those assets, which would be substantial given that they would have been bought a long time ago?
Absolutely, Alec. Yeah, it's definitely something to consider. I did pull out my calculator quickly, and it's 32% of your capital gain, if you're a individual investor, that you have to invest in solar assets to essentially not pay any capital gains tax.
Wow. Okay, good stuff. Sorry, Dion. But I do think that that's pretty relevant for anybody and there are many people who sit in that situation. They don't sell their shares. They don't sell that property, their investment property, because they're worried that it's going to cause so much of a tax event that it reduces the return. And of course, they don't really want to be giving the government more money than they absolutely have to. So quite relevant. If you're in that position, then listen closely, because this is a goodie. Anyway, over to you, Dion.
Thanks, Alex. So yeah, in this example, so we're looking at a 1 million rand potential investment and making the assumption that the investor is on a 45% tax rate. And we'll go through the detail now on the next slide, but just high level. So this means that if you invest 1 million, you will get 1 million back from SARS in year one, either by short paying SARS if you're a provisional taxpayer, or if you're a PAY payer, claim back from SARS. So you're 100% de-risked as far as your tax is concerned in year one. So all your capital that you invest, you're getting back. Then there's this unique new element that we brought in. In February, next year, which is in the first 6 months of your investment, you will also receive a 70,000 Rand, which is your portion of the development profits. Now, considering that we construct these plants with external investment money to the point where they commercially, we call it COD, then we sell them across to the income and deed structure. So there's a transaction that takes place, and we've created this structure in such a way that the investor also shares in that benefit. So there's a 70,000 return in the first 6 months. And then over and above that, a 45,500 inflation-adjusted return average per annum for the next 25 years. And we like to position this as an income for life type product. And looking at the detail, James, maybe just take us through this. It'll become a little bit clearer.
Yeah. So, and Alec, this is probably where that question comes in that you spoke about earlier is why is the return so high? And the real reason is if you put 1 million rand in and you get 1 million rand back in year one, the returns are going to be high because everything that you get after that just increases the returns. And then with the added development profit that we distribute by the end of February of 69,420, then that also increases the return quite significantly. But then because there's quite a lot of debt in, we start off with lower annual distributions for the first couple of years of around 20,000 Rand. And that steadily grows as the price of electricity increases and we charge more for the electricity that we sell. So that ramps up to around 40,000 Rand per year, and that's the pre-tax number. And then for between year 10 and 25, it generates another 2.5 million in total for a total, you know, call it gain of 3.88 million. And that's including the tax benefit. And because of those returns, that's how you get to the 31%. And Dion and I, we have a spreadsheet that we can share and you can go through the numbers. If you don't believe us, it does differ from, you know, one investor to the other. Main reason might be the tax rates that they're in. The other reason might be their particular tax situation. Like Dion mentioned, there's a difference between provisional taxpayers and also PAYE earners. And some people have taxes payable by August. Some of them have taxes payable by February. So all the different scenarios we cater for. But if we look to the table at the right, you'd see that if you're a 45% investor, after year one, you've de-risked 109% of your capital, and after year two, 111%. But if we go down to the lower tax rates, let's say the 39 and 36%, you still get a 20% IRR or 24% IRR if you're in the lower tax bracket. And the vast majority of your investment has been de-risked by year one and year two. So I think just because of the gearing and the way that the returns work, usually these products don't cater for 45% taxpayers, but in our case, we've tried to come up with something that also works for people paying taxes at a lower rate.
If I can just maybe add that, thank you, James. The numbers that we see are net of fees. So our fees have already been taken into account. I think important that the risk capital is actually zero in this investment on a 45% taxpayer, meaning that you've received all of the capital back from SARS in year one.
Chris has got a question for you guys. He says, is this investment opportunity available to a family trust?
Yeah, Alex, so the answer again for that is absolutely. It's available for any taxpayer in South Africa that has income tax to be paid to SARS. In some cases, it might make more sense to distribute the income in the trust down to the individual beneficiaries. But you know, if you have so much income in your trust and you can't distribute to your beneficiaries anymore, you can make the investment out of the trust. And from a kind of like estate planning perspective, it's also a nice way to keep the assets in the trust, and it can absolutely work because trusts. All the money that you keep within the trust is taxed at 45%. So the returns that you would get in the trust would be the ones on your screen now, like if you have tax payable in August and February this year.
Nice. Nathan's got a follow-up question. Is there a lock-in period?
Yeah. I can start and then Dion can maybe add on to that. But because you're getting such a high tax benefit up front, the whole structure is geared at looking at a 25-year investment horizon because you're getting all your capital back from SARS in year one. But we also plan to give the investors an option after 7 or 10 years to exit. So there is a lock-in. You can't sell your partnership stake immediately, like next year or something like that. But we do plan to give the investors the option. There's an active market for these assets. There's always people looking for yield and like institutions. We feel confident that by year 7 to year 10, we would be able to give the investors an exit option.
And maybe just to qualify that, typically what it would look like, Alec, we will effectively buy the future returns of that particular investor back from him at a discounted rate, which is market related. Okay, I'm having trouble with my screen. There we go. Alec, then we've... if you go back to that previous slide and you look at the 27% sort of tax range which companies fall into, your IRRs are not that attractive. So we tried to come up with a solution to also incentivize companies to invest into one of these investments. So let's assume a company invests. By the way, the minimum for a company is 2.5 million. We give them the option to, at the back end, also sign a virtual PPA with us. So effectively buying a portion of their energy from the Futureness energy plant. Now, the caveat, as I said right in the beginning, it has to be a medium voltage client. In other words, a higher use energy use client. And they have to, what's the second provision, James?
Yeah, so medium voltage and time of use tariff.
Time of use, correct. So if you combine the savings that the investor would incur acquiring the energy from us, including the investment that he's making, you're then getting to a 26% IRR pre-tax and 20% post-tax for that company. Now, obviously, not all companies will qualify for this, but there are many. And it's a very exciting opportunity. It opened up a new market for us.
It sounds to me like if you have got specific areas, it's probably best to talk to you guys. Because you've now already touched on family trusts as a clearly we know how it works for individuals, but family trusts might be a little different. Yeah, companies might be a little different as well. But knowing that the entry level is 2.5 million rand, if you're an electricity consumer as well, does that, when you talk companies, does that include farmers, for instance?
Absolutely. Alec, we've done a couple of installations last year for farms. That was on the farm, so not with PPAs. And typically, those installations run up to like 10 million, 15 million quite easily. So it would make sense for a farmer to invest a million or 2.5 million rand in something like this, especially there's almost like an arbitrage because of the sun, in the northwest. There's more sunshine than in KZN, for instance. So if you're a farmer in KZN, you can actually get a better energy yield in the northwest by buying electricity through a wheeling plant. So,
okay, good. Questions, and they're coming in now. Antonius wants to know, can you invest 500,000 rand? Is that, in other words, 500,000 rand? Is that the if you got that money, can you put it in?
Yes, Alec. The minimum for this investment is 500,000, so absolutely correct.
Harshad says, if the project fails for some reason, what is the impact on SARS recoupment on the capital and especially the debt portion?
James, you'll take that? Sorry, you're muted, James.
James, you're muted at the moment. All right. Well,
not getting himself unmuted for some reason.
I'll look from my side. Sorry, not sure what's going on.
Okay.
Let me, if maybe I can answer that in the meantime, Alec.
Please do.
Let me take the second section of the question in terms of the debt component. And I think it also speaks to one of the risks in the investment, which is obviously the debt component. So let's just talk through that. So first thing that we do to manage the debt is you'll see that we bring down the debt from 51% to 45% in the first 6 months of the investment. Now, there's a massive balloon payment that we do in the first 6 months. So that's one of the key strategies. Then we also, we reduce the management fees should we not hit the targets. So we as fund managers then have to make sure that, you know, we achieve the targets. And then this is important. For a period of 5 years, we keep 6 months worth of debt repayments in cash reserves. Should there be a problem with one of the off-takers not paying. But having said that, if you understand the wheeling principle of being able to sell energy to multiple clients and how easy it is to activate and deactivate a client through this wheeling, Eskom's national wheeling framework, when they don't pay you, you effectively disconnect them and connect another client that you signed a PPA with. It is the ultimate risk mitigating strategy in energy provision.
Yeah, and that's why I said to you initially with wheeling is that like you've got an infinite demand, and in South Africa, you pretty much have, given the scarcity of electricity here and likely to continue for some time to go. Stu, I'm not sure if you'd like to give James a call and see if you can work out how we can unmute him, because clearly he won't be able to participate in the conversation on a muted microphone on his side. We'll just go through questions, Dion. We've had the minimum investment from Dirk, R500,000. Entry level investment is from Natasha for discretionary trusts.
Also 500.
Okay. Nathan's back again. Could a fund manager get involved and offer fractional shares or slices? Isn't that interesting? That's a little bit like the Easy Equities, buying individual shares for an amount. Is that possible?
That is interesting. I suggest you get in touch with us so that we can discuss it. I don't exactly understand how he wants to structure that, but let's look at it. Yes.
No, it makes sense. I mean, if a guy hasn't got R500,000, you've only got R100,000, well, why can't five people get together and to buy one chunk of R500,000 kind of thing? I suppose that's where he's going with it.
Mm. Yeah. Suggest he speaks to us.
So you're saying that you'd be interested to consider that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. And Hannes says, please show the breakdown of year 10 to 25. In other words, the 2.551 million. Can't see how you get to that, he says. It sounds a bit high.
James, I think if you can maybe just, I'll unshare, yeah. And then if you can share those numbers. But before we do that, Ali, can we just finish this risk slide?
With
and
pleasure.
Then we ask James to. The other risk is, of course, Eskom. Which is an important one to take cognizance of. You know, we're using the Eskom infrastructure to wheel energy. Now, you know, I view Eskom as not necessarily an institutional risk, but more systemic risk. If you consider, you know, government level interference there. But, you know, if Eskom fails, we've got far bigger problems in this country. So we can't unfortunately control that or manage that, but that's one risk that one has to be aware of. We've spoken about the debt. And then linking onto that, I think also speaking to the question that was asked earlier about the credit risk of off-takers, a fundamentally different risk profile now suddenly that you have the ability to sell to multiple clients and we can switch them on and off as we want with this one-to-many relationship. James, I'm going to stop sharing here for a moment. If you can bring those numbers up for us.
I think James is...
Dion, sorry, we've got a problem with James. He's frozen his side. Zoom
can you ask,
actually frozen.
Ask so, him to reboot, maybe, yeah. Stu.
You can't reboot, back. But I'll be on it. Sorry, guys. Okay.
Okay. Right. So, unfortunately, that won't. That's not possible. Good old Zoom. You know, Zoom's worked so well for us for a period of time, and now suddenly we have some issue. But I'm sure it'll be sorted out in a moment. Before we go into this slide, Dion, couple of questions. Antonio says, so if I invest R500,000, 5 years later I pass away, what takes place then?
So this can be inherited by your spouse without attracting any recoupment. So that will be the first and obvious thing that we suggest that's been done. But you know, if you think about it, if it passes on to, or it gets sold, it's a deemed sale. So then there'll be a recoupment. But we can sit with you and show you what those numbers look like, but it still makes sense.
The important thing, Antonius, is just don't go. Just stay on the earth. And then Harshad's question is, as a follow-up, if the plant has a failure and cannot produce electricity, what is the SARS recoupment of debt?
No, there's no SARS recoupment. So the investor got the so it's up to the fund managers to get the plant working. Obviously, from a debt perspective, there's a debt covenants, and the first thing will obviously be for the plant to get liquidated. But I think getting back to the debt question earlier, and this is maybe a good time to discuss it. If we go back to the example where you invest 100 rand, and let's say for example we get 50 rand with a debt. You're sitting with 150 rand asset on your balance sheet. If this plant fails in year 10, for example, for whatever reason, the debt would have been repaid by the tune of half, more or less. So effectively, the exposure will be 25 rand for the investor, and keeping in mind that the asset then has to be sold and liquidated. So there is a risk, but we see it as a low risk.
Bruce wants to know, what assumptions are made with respect to demand and selling tariffs and rates and the escalation stroke reductions over the 20-year investment term?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. And again, you know, speaking back to, you know, longer-term PPAs. So the moment you start entering into 20-year plus PPAs or 15-year plus PPAs, your rate is under pressure. But with what we're doing here, with shorter term PPAs, we are able to, you know, to go as high as 1 rand 30, 1 rand 40, for example, per kilowatt hour. If you think about long term PPAs, you know, you're talking in the region of 90 cents to 1 rand per kilowatt hour. So that's more or less the numbers that one could look at.
Chris is back with another question. Partnerships are inherently risky. Is it correct that this is a limited liability partnership where you can only be liable for your initial investment and no more?
James, you want to take that one?
Here we go. I'm back, Gent. I caught the last end of that question. Apologies for my technical difficulties. So in terms of Section 24H of the Income Tax Act, and that's the section that deals with partnerships, for investors to get the full tax benefit, they have to be at risk for the whole amount. So it is a limited partnership, so your risks are limited. But in a case where there's debt, like this particular partnership, you are liable for the whole portion of debt. So effectively, from a SARS perspective, what will be on your balance sheet is the whole asset and the whole liability. But the chances of, actually anything happen, you know, with you, and we'll have to go back to the investors and ask them for money is very, very slim because of the debt gearing ratio that we have in this project. If you think there's probably a 1.8 million rand asset for every million rand investment. So there's only 800,000 rand in debt per million rand investment, but there's a 1.8 million rand asset. So we'll have to sell that plant. And only if we can't sell that plant for at least 800,000 rand, that's when we'll have to come to investors. But I think that scenario is very, very remote.
There's an anonymous attendee who wants to stay that way, who says, what is the battery life of the solar batteries used at the plant?
Yeah, so this is a grid-tied plant. There's no batteries, but important on particularly this site, there's no load shedding in this area. So we're not at risk that the plant won't be able to sell energy because there's no load shedding. There are energy curtailment in that particular area, and that's for users of energy, but there's no batteries now.
Okay. All right. Well, let's go through the team.
Thanks, Alec. Maybe just briefly for those of you that don't know us, the Futureneers have been established in 2016. as a VCC, a venture capital company, and we've now evolved into a private equity fund. We are the biggest investors in our own fund. In each one of our products, we also personally invest, albeit directly to gain a tax benefit or through the development structures that we set up. We now probably have just over 350 high net worth individuals invested into our fund, more than 600 million rand in capital raised, established 12 J portfolios. So in June 2021, we raised for solar energy plants for the first time. And I mean, I think we've shown our track record in terms of deployment and paying our dividends. Investors that have invested with us will know that. Our team excels in tax structuring, including experience of pioneering South Africa's first 12B fund. Now, James, our young gun here, he launched the first 12B fund in the country 2 years ago with one of our competitors, and we're very privileged to have him as part of our team. And I think between all of us, over 12 years experience in renewable asset investments. Myself, James, Yaku's unfortunately not here today. He's our group CFO. And then Ricky Heiser, over 20 years experience in renewable energy. He's our technical lead. And I think that brings us to the end of the presentation.
Excellent.
James, do you want to summarize this maybe?
Yeah, I was going to ask if you could do that because our questions have now all been answered. So everybody's happy from that perspective. Perhaps if we could summarize it all as a final takeaway.
Yeah, so this is really the boring information sheet that we have to work through, unfortunately. But essentially, there's 64 million rand that's available for 12B investors at this stage. And like Dion mentioned, 500,000 rand for individual investors. And then 2.5 million rand for the company on the VPPA side. And then the easy way to think about this is what the tax deduction would be is for every 1 million rand that you put in, you get a 2.223 million rand tax, Section 12BA tax allowance. So 2.22 times tax deduction on the money that you put in for this particular investment. And that's because of the debt that we have in. And then if you're a 45% taxpayer, you would get 1 million rand back. So your capital at risk is effectively zero. And that's what we try to do with this particular project. For someone at a 39% tax bracket, that's around people who earn 600,000-700,000 rand a year and up. They only have 13% of their investment at risk. And then we charge a 2% upfront fee and 2% management fee annually and on the assets under management. And we also have performance fees of 20% to management only from year 10 onwards, should these high returns be met. That 31% we can only share in that once that has been met. And then one very important thing, like we've only going at this capital raise for quite some, not for too long. But what we'd like investors, we know it's early in the tax year, but we would like investors to put in a 10% cash contribution now to secure their spot in this investment. And then the remainder would be payable by the 25th of July this year, so that we can start building our plant in early August. So yeah, that's us.
So once the 64 million has come in, that's it. Hannes, I don't know what he had to say. Thanks, Hannes, but it's not a question. It says, except mine. I'm not sure what he's talking about there. But Antonios, can your fund go onto the JSE or could you sell your fund to, say, Alan Gray?
Do you want to take that one?
Yeah. Antonios, unfortunately, it's not on the JSE yet. Maybe in a couple of years down the line when we've built a very big portfolio. Unfortunately, now you can't sell it on the JSE or to Alan Gray. It's private equity investments. And we'll have to provide you with a liquidity event that we think will probably happen around year 7 to year 10.
Hannes' question was the one earlier where we had the frozen screen on your side, James, about the breakdown of year 10 to 25.
Yeah, so I can quickly share that. Okay, so we have an Excel spreadsheet over here, and this is also on a million rand investment, and we can share this calculator with anyone of the investors. So you can just reach out to us via email on a 45% tax bracket, and we split the tax saving between August this year and February next year to say, okay, half of your taxes will be paid now and half of the taxes will be paid in February. So essentially what we get down here from year 10, so that would be around 2035. So we start off with around 52,000 rand. So remember in year one, the first year return would be around 20,000 rand. And then it grows up to 50,000 rand from year 10 onwards. And then it really just gets like nice big numbers on a million rand investment that you've gotten back. In year one, you get like 150,000 and it goes up to like 270,000. And the one thing that, you know, it's thinking very far ahead into the future, but these solar plants, especially with wheeling, they continue to operate. The oldest solar plant in the world that was built in the 1960s still operates today, 50 years later. So they can actually still be income after that. And that's why Dion said income for life. But we haven't modeled further than 25 years. And then, yeah.
I can maybe just add on to that, James. So, Alec, the way that we position this to investors, and I think many of them have taken to this, that if you continue doing this for 5 years, you take your tax, you invest it into one of these products, you know, year after year after year, considering that it will obviously get a little bit less in terms of the tax advantage next year, you will be able to build up a steady annuity-based income stream for yourself, considering that most of it has been shielded by SARS. That's the way that one should look at it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure it's a little bit like a very basic suggestion of rich dad, poor dad. Remember Kiyosaki, who said, make your investment and live off the returns, live off the yields. And I was thinking about that as a possibility for some people, particularly if they have got big assets that they haven't been able to sell and get it, maybe not getting a decent or a big return from it. And here is your opportunity. So I like the fact that you can write this back against capital gains. Lots of ways. Just got to apply your mind and make sure that you take advantage of these opportunities that come along. Gents, before we go, what are the chances of this being extended beyond February?
Yeah,
Alec, we hope that it will, but at this stage, there's no indication. James, I don't know what's your view.
Yeah, Alec, obviously, we'll still have Section 12B after February 2025. So it will go down to a 100% tax deduction on solar plants of less than 1 megawatt, but then you'll get a 50-30-20 tax deduction on solar plants that's bigger than 1 megawatt. My hope, maybe it's a hope, but is that they actually increase that 1 megawatt limit so that we still get a 100% tax deduction on solar assets that's bigger than 1 megawatt. Because we still have like green and 2030 targets, zero carbon targets that we still have to hit. And, you know, we are dependent on the coal generators still. But, you know, eventually they'll have to phase out in the next 30 years or so. So there is going to be a constant need for renewable energies. And I think government realizes that and they'll probably help us to get to that goal in some way or another.
But the big story there in what you've said is that the extra 25%, in other words, the 125% that you get now, that might not be around after February next year. That was a kicker that makes these returns so appealing.
Absolutely. I don't see. I think just the amount of load shedding that we currently get, which is none. If there was continued load shedding, we'd probably get an extension. But, you know, I think they've sorted out that major urgent problem at least.
And helped by the private sector, because if you took away the the 6 gigawatts that the private sector has been putting into the system, well, we'd have 6 stages of load shedding, wouldn't we? So it just shows the way that the private sector can really be brought in as a very positive force in an economy, and South Africa's finally seemingly learning that. Dion, last word from your side?
Yes, Alec. Stuart has put up a few links in the comment section there. The last one is an inquiry link. So if investors that want to talk to us, just click on that link. We will contact you as soon as practically possible, sit with you, take you through all the details. We'll run the numbers. We'll look at each investor's unique scenario. And then there's also, as I mentioned, that Wheeling white paper of Eskom. There's a link to that. And then also a video of that phase one of this plant, the 4.2 megawatt that we built in February. There's a nice flyover drone video of that for investors to go and look at.
I thought you were going to talk about your video with Ava. It's an AI-produced video. She's a hottie, that's for sure. Just tell us how you did that. I suppose the American accent kind of gives it away, but wow, what a wonderful use of technology.
No, it's remarkable, actually. It's so easy to use. You write your script, you choose your voice, and once you're happy with how the voice reads the script, then you send it in, and they send you back this AI avatar, and they've lip-synced that avatar to the text. It's just unbelievable how well it works. And we've used it in the previous capital raise in February. And I was saying to Yaku, improvement in the technology since then in such a short space of time is absolutely amazing. I mean, if you don't know that it's an AI, you wouldn't even see it.
Yeah, you wouldn't believe it. And she introduces herself as Ava, and she has perfect diction, gets all the South African words right. Quite extraordinary. Well, well done, guys. Thanks for opening our eyes as well to this wonderful opportunity that does exist. We know it's good. Some people think it's too good to be true. We can now see why it isn't too good to be true, because it's a massive need that the country had when the legislation was brought through. I'm delighted to hear from you, James, that you feel that it, in some form, we will continue to have a tax incentive to sort out the electricity issue that South Africa has, which isn't going away. Demand for electricity continues to rise as it would in any modern economy. And as this economy grows, please God, after the election and the changes that we are hoping to see here with a coalition government, that demand for electricity isn't going to go away either. But thanks for shining a light on this opportunity for people, ordinary South Africans, to use their tax money and help to solve one of our biggest problems that we have. Stu, before we go, would you just give us an indication of when the recording will be available?
Excellent. Thanks, Alec, and thanks, James and Dion. We'll get the video up this afternoon. The team will just put it together quickly, and we'll get it onto the Biz News TV YouTube channel. And we'll also send out an email with the link to that inquiry form that Dion mentioned, as well as the YouTube link later today or early tomorrow morning.
Magic. Thanks, gents. Until the next time. Cheerio.
Thank you. Bye-bye.